This is a terrible story of deprivation, cannibalism, and absolute horror.
Yes, just another week of food here on RN First Bite. Michael McKenzie with you. But I do assure you, we are going to mark the festive season in fine style. A little later, using your smartphone as a tool for recipes, weights and measures as you cook over this holiday season. But we are feeling Christmassy, and I was perusing online looking for something to put on the table and chanced upon this blog entry containing a faded black and white photo from 1925 showing this massive Christmas pudding emblazoned with the word Australia, and it was being towed on a carriage through the streets of London. What added to the bizarre nature of this enormous pudding were two animals, one on each side of it, a kangaroo and an emu, and they were stuffed. It was like a fruit and brandy version of our coat of arms. And the story that goes with it just has to be told. So I rang its author in the Lakes District of the United Kingdom. He's a renowned food historian, Ivan Day. And Ivan begins by taking us back to the first ever recorded reference to a Christmas pudding aboard a ship bound for America in 1649.
During the 1640s, a lot of English aristocrats escaped because we'd just had a civil war, and some decided to go to the New World. And one gentleman, a guy called Colonel Norwood, you can actually find his little essay, which is called A Voyage to Virginia. He gives a very detailed account of the whole journey. By the time they got to America, they'd run out of food and water. They landed in a marsh area, stranded, and they started to turn to cannibalism. In fact, just before Christmas, they were eating rats. And about a week after Christmas, they're actually eating each other. It's absolutely desperate. And they found in the hold of the ship some leftover grain, a few currants, some wine, and they decided to make a pudding. But it's so curious that in the middle of all this privation, they are still making a Christmas pudding. And this is actually the very first time that in any literature, Christmas pudding is named a Christmas pudding. It's usually called a plum pudding at this time. So this is the very first reference. It's an absolutely dreadful story, but that's the first time I've ever found it called a Christmas pudding.
So, Ivan, let's jump forward now, almost three centuries. And why is there a giant Christmas pudding being towed through London on a carriage?
Well, the thing about Christmas pudding is most of the ingredients are things that can't be grown in Britain. During the course of the 18th and 19th century, of course, we expanded out of this tiny island into an enormous empire and started moving into places like Australia with much better climates where we could grow these things, creating our own supplies. But what started to happen was that we got flooded with cheap dried fruit from America, from California. And the patriotic ladies of Britain were horrified because they knew of the incredible loss that Australian troops had suffered during the war helping England and Europe. And they felt that we should not be buying goods from outside the empire. And they founded a little organization called the British Women's Patriotic League. And one of the things they came up with was the idea of everybody in the empire making a Christmas pudding using only empire goods. But what you're referring to was the Lord Mayor's Parade in London in 1925. The Australian Fruit Growers Association were getting really cheesed off with the situation, and they managed to persuade the Lord Mayor of London to run his great parade on the theme of empire trade. And they put this float together, which was pulled by wonderful white horses with this 10-foot diameter Christmas pudding with the Australian flag sticking out of the top, with a stuffed emu, a stuffed kangaroo, and the words Australia in 12-inch high letters. The following year, the king started to really join the campaign. This was King George V. And he encouraged his chef to come up with a recipe which would include every single nation in the empire. And they produced posters, advertisements. The recipe started appearing in newspapers.
So every Christmas Day, people throughout the British Empire, including us in Australia, sat down to eat the same Christmas pudding recipe as a kind of unified symbol of our own power.
Yeah, this was almost like a religious Eucharistic sacrament every Christmas Day. Eating this dish, really, which represented the family unity of the British Empire. It's an extraordinary concept, and it's very alien to how we think nowadays.
Now, one of the other central characters in this story of the Empire Christmas pudding is an Irish peer, isn't it? A Lord Meath, who understood how cinema could be harnessed for propaganda.
As early as 1909, he used cinema as a promotional tool and actually filmed an Empire parade in a northern city here in England. When the Christmas pudding came out in the 20s, he was there, of course, encouraging these propaganda films to be made of the event, and one has survived, which shows him standing by the chefs who are making the pudding, and as they're stirring, each ingredient is brought down the steps to the table by somebody from that country. So, for instance, there's a chef bearing a big basket which has got emblazoned on it, currants from Australia. The spices are served into the pudding by two gentlemen in Indian costume with turbans and turned up shoes and silk robes. And this was filmed, so people actually got to see it in those very early cinemas. He was a remarkable man, and he understood how to get the message out by using celluloid, and as well as the newspapers, of course. There's another film, actually, which you can find a link to on my blog, which was a film that was made in 1929 as a silent movie called One Family. And it was very much a British propaganda film to get people to try the King's Christmas pudding recipe. It became known as the King's Christmas pudding by that period. In the 30s, it was dubbed with sound. So it's actually one of the earliest movies to actually be converted from a silent movie to a talkie movie.
How does a king get his pudding? But I want to find out for myself.
And it's about a little London schoolboy from a working class family who's a bit of a dreamer, and he ends up being transported in his brain during a sort of daydream in his school class to Buckingham Palace, and ends up going all over the world to see where the ingredients come from to make the Christmas pudding, including Mildura.
Here are some raisins.
Where do they come from?
Look, down through the world lies my land, Australia.
But it's all dried up.
Wait.
There's a wonderful short passage of dams and irrigation channels being dug, and then it shows the raisin gathering with wagons pulled by horses, probably filmed in the late 20s. It's a very corny, very dated film, but it's well worth watching. My favourite bit in it is actually showing the kitchens, the real kitchens with real cooks and chefs in them in Buckingham Palace in 1929. But you have to be patient because it's incredibly dated, but it's very, very interesting.
Jolly good raisins.
Well, Ivan, a little bit of sad news, because we're finishing today with One Family's version of a Christmas pudding, but I've got a feeling it doesn't even come close to representing the British Empire, not even the Commonwealth. But anyway, thank you for joining us from the UK.
Merry Christmas.
And to you.
The King's Christmas Pudding. What a lot of lovely things.
Another tiny excerpt from the propaganda film dedicated to the Empire Christmas pudding called One Family, which you can actually see in all its faded glory online. There's links to it and historian Ivan Day's blog on our webpage. Just search for RN First Bite at abc.net.au/radionational.